Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA, and that is here. It's another one of those weeks where what I had planned to talk about, or maybe even previewed on the previous episode, got pushed aside by something that happened in the course of the week that I found interesting and that I believe I have unique insight into and experience with to share. Some things that have happened since then, but I don't want to pass up something that I'm really interested in discussing, even though there's subsequent things that I'm also looking forward to talking about. In this case, there were two events, and they both happened on the same night. The Milwaukee Bucks blowing a 17-point lead and losing to the Los Angeles Lakers in double overtime, and the Sacramento Kings getting demolished by the Dallas Mavericks at home by 36 points in a game with playoff seeding implications. Dallas hopped into the coveted sixth seed in the West, the last spot that guarantees a playoff berth. I know some of this is dated, but this is what happened then. And the win dropped the Kings, or the loss rather for Sacramento, dropped the Kings to seventh, the first rung of the play-in tournament, which requires beating the eighth seed in an 83rd game in order to secure seventh, and a first-round best-of-seven date with the number two seed, which, as of now, is what I would say the most vulnerable of the top seeds in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Their win over the New York Knicks, their most recent win over the New York Knicks, notwithstanding. The Kings' loss, though, wasn't what drew my interest. They've been as inconsistent as any team in the league this season. Sometimes I'm thinking, boy, these guys are going to be dangerous in the playoffs. And at other times I'm thinking, if they're lucky enough to get in, they're not getting past the first round. But all that aside, we'll find out exactly what happens. I'm not going to predict at this point. It was the Kings point guard De'Aaron Fox's reaction to the loss afterward in the post-game press conference that caught my attention. Or, more specifically, De'Aaron's reaction to a question about the loss and what his purpose for doing the post-game press conference after a disappointing performance might be. The reporter prefaced his question by stating that, and I quote, "For a while now, you've come out and addressed some of your bigger and more difficult losses. Is this something you're making a point of doing for some reason in leading this team and showing that accountability?" Now, before I get to Fox's reaction, let me say that the reporter made a classic mistake. He kept talking and half-answered the question. He should have stopped at, "Is this something you're making a point of doing?" The "for some reason, leading this team, showing that accountability" is another way of saying, "Hey, I'm trying to throw you a softball here. Don't get mad at me. This is friendly fire. It's not a curve. And in any case, all of it has a whiff of pandering, if not apprehension. Maybe it was the facial expression that De'Aaron had when the guy started the question that got him nervous, and he decided, I gotta let him know I'm not coming at him. I'm actually looking for a way to compliment him. But it ultimately only confused the whole exchange, because De'Aaron had to ask, essentially, are you asking if this has a value for me to be up here? And maybe De'Aaron responds the same way if he had asked the shorter, more direct question. If he did, then hopefully the reporter would ask, so it's just a coincidence that after a lot of the recent tough losses, you've been the one to address the media. That's not intentional on your part. It's just happenstance. Because if it's not, then the reporter would know that his idea that De'Aaron was doing this out of a sense of responsibility as a team leader was wrong. He was mistaken. And it's always useful to know when something you thought is wrong. It's a little humbling, but it tells you, you know what? I don't need to go in that direction. And maybe tells you a little bit more about the guy that you thought you knew and actually don't. And maybe the intentional part is by the Kings PR staff, which goes to De'Aaron whenever there's a tough loss to be addressed for some reason. Finding out if that's true would be interesting insight into the team and De'Aaron, and would be essentially a compliment as far as the Kings PR staff is concerned. The only thing that drives me crazier than a reporter answering their own question when posing it is when a reporter doesn't ask a question. He or she just says, talk about how you guys came back in the fourth quarter, or whatever the case may be. There is nothing lazier nor more insulting to both the craft and the person you're interviewing, the athlete. Do you not have the energy? And I'm speaking to reporters out there, or any reporter who would ask a question that way or start it with talk about. Do you not have the energy to at the very least formulate what specifically you want to know? You're not doing that with talk about. You're low-key telling the athlete, I don't really need you to provide any insight. I'm not really interested in what you have to say. I just need audio or video of you yapping to keep my producer or my editor happy. Now, about De'Aaron's response. It was fairly combative. Maybe that's because he just got drilled by 36 points by a conference rival. Maybe his relationship with the reporter, who is a local TV anchor and reporter and podcaster, prompted his reaction. Maybe he got some tough personal news that he's dealing with. Or maybe he wants the world to know he could care less about doing press conferences. Because he certainly did that in no uncertain terms, answering this reporter's question. The sense that I got from De'Aaron's response is that he agrees to do the post-game press conferences because the media relations staff asked him. He is, as he sees it, doing them a favor, or just being a good guy. But that's as far as it goes. He sees really no other value in it, which is a mistake. I've probably mentioned this before, but I've done some media training with athletes, coaches, and organizations in a variety of sports, including basketball and the NBA. It's never been a full-time job, and I never looked to make it one. I did it mostly because I didn't see anyone who had covered sports as intimately as I have in that space from my perspective. Most of the media trainers out there are either former PR directors or TV anchor types, and their training is of two types. The PR directors take the approach of teaching how to protect yourself from the media, how to keep the media at arm's length, how to never say anything that might be construed as controversial. The TV anchor types focus on the mechanics of looking and sounding good in front of a microphone or camera. Where to look, how to stand, tricks to being concise and photogenic. I'm no doubt not giving both of those groups enough credit for all the things they teach or share, but that's how I would define their respective approaches in general terms. Now, I've never tried to tell athletes what to say, how to say it, but my real objective was to teach them how to utilize interviews and media interactions to benefit them, and however they saw fit, whatever their end goal might be, other than to to alienate the media. In the case of De'Aaron, that's the sense that I got. He was just letting you know, I really don't need you. But my goal was how to not, yes, protect themselves from the media, but also cultivate a relationship with the people that covered them. Not protecting themselves by building a wall, but by developing trust. To think of media people as potential advocates rather than strictly adversaries. Not every media person is like that. And in part of my teaching was how you can identify the ones that you can trust and the ones that you can't. I believed and still believe that not only that athletes can benefit from preparing for interviews the same way they did for games, having a plan, practicing certain elements of it, and anticipating special situations. Even in terms of, they all have a sense in basketball, they all have a sense of the 24-second clock. It's just innate at this point. Like, they know how long that is. You play enough games, you just know how long 24 seconds is. I told them, use that. No answer needs to be longer than 24 seconds. If it is, then chances are it can be cut or is going to be cut to fit whatever the, especially for TV, but radio too, it's going to be cut. And then your whole context is going to be lost. The shorter and more succinct you are, the better chance you are that you have of not being misunderstood. And for all of this, I thought not only could it benefit them, but that they should make it a habit of preparing for interviews because of what was at stake, which is the image of them that resonates way more than anything they do on the court. I know for basketball fans, that seems extraordinary. But for the majority of people out there, there's a greater percentage of people that see interviews that do not watch an entire game. They may see highlights now and then. They're not watching an entire game. But if there's something spicy, if there's something notable that someone says, or it's just their favorite player, there's a better chance that they're going to listen to the interview than they would watching the entire game. And that is something most athletes, and I suspect De'Aaron is one of them, don't understand. They want to be judged by how they perform on the court. They assume that's the way it works because everybody in the business, to a certain extent, that's how they judge them. But I've told the athletes that I've media trained, I understand why you would want it that way, but that's not the way it works. That's not reality. Because there are far more fans interested in what athletes say and do off the court than what they do on it. Basketball fans are interested in what they do on the court. True basketball fans who love the game and will watch almost anything, no matter how bad the game is, they're interested. They're going to learn something from it. They're going to find something out. Even if they're going to find out how awful somebody is, they'll watch. That is a smaller percentage of the people that claim to be interested in basketball than you would think. Fans of drama and human nature and celebrity, they're interested in the off-the-court stuff, and that's a far bigger number. Just look at the ratings for the Kardashians versus your average NBA game. I guarantee you, as many or more people will see the clip of De'Aaron's press conference than any one of his games this season, especially those that aren't televised on national TV, as the Mavs game was on TNT. And the impression of who he is will be more impactful because there's nothing else going on. I'm talking about the impression of him in a press conference. Nobody else. There's no other action. It's just him up there answering questions. It's him, his personality, his intelligence, his demeanor, his vocabulary, his perspective, his body language, facial expressions. That's what makes every interview an opportunity as much as an obligation. And if approached as an opportunity rather than an obligation, how different would the tone and tenor of it be? We actually see examples of it all the time. Guys who embrace the interviews. Klay Thompson, as he's gone through the last year or two, through his rough patches, has embraced it. And he's been open and honest. And for as much as Klay's game has fallen off, nobody's coming after him. Certainly not in the media. It works. Attitude is everything in front of a camera or microphone. Do you think Charles Barkley has all the commercials he has because of what he did on the court? Hell no. He was a truly entertaining Hall of Fame player, but there are plenty of players who have done more, had more success, were bigger stars as players. I could go down the list of the guys that are still making money off the game. Grant Hill's another one. Both of them, Barkley and Hill. Barkley was always available to the media, and he was entertaining and generally personable his entire career, no matter what happened on the court. Same for Grant Hill. Barkley's ability to express himself on TNT is a direct result of all that practice, the confidence that he built of being himself in front of the camera. TNT hiring him is a direct result of that. The same can be said for former players working on other media platforms. Somewhere along the way, media people took note of how they carried themselves, how thoughtful they were in their speech, how easy they were to be around, so that whether they expressed an interest in working in the media or not, most of them were approached about possibly doing so. Now, I'm aware that many athletes today, and De'Aaron is certainly one, are making so much money off their NBA contracts, they don't need endorsement deals or to be concerned about having a second career in media or some other field when they retire. They already have multi-generational wealth. But they also have, post-career, about 40 or 50 years to live. And the relationships they build during their playing career can be instrumental in the quality of the second half of their lives. And if you're, conversely, an ass in front of the cameras, rest assured you are foreclosing on potential relationships before you're even aware that they were possible. The average business person or company CEO who might be looking to forge a relationship with De'Aaron is going to watch his interaction with the media like a grown-up. I know there's plenty of you out there that have a jaundiced view of the media, reporters are evil, and you think everybody thinks that way. Nah, not really. Most people look at it and say, yeah, you know what? You're going to be covered by the media. You're going to be asked tough questions now and then. How do you handle them? Because if somebody's working for me, chances are they're going to face that situation. Or what if I ask them tough questions? Are they going to respond to me the same way they do to a reporter? Are they going to be condescending if a colleague asks them a question? Like how you act is not situational. It's not selective. It's not conditional. When people are watching, they assume that's who you are, not, it's the media. He's totally different with everybody else. Most people are not going to make that leap. They're going to gauge him, De'Aaron, or whoever's in front of the camera and microphone, as someone they'd want to have a conversation with or spend time talking to, cultivating a relationship. De'Aaron sounded kind of pissy without any clear understanding or explanation why he was pissy. Consider, on the other hand, if he had come out and said that while he doesn't believe in talking to his teammates through the media, and he could even make a joke of it, he's pretty sure they wouldn't be listening if he did, that he comes out to talk after difficult losses because that's the hardest time to address the media, and he believes that's his duty as one of the team leaders. He wants to take that off of everybody else's plate. How different would the media in that room and the people watching see De'Aaron if he had approached it that way? In fact, the reporter served it up so that he could answer it exactly that way. And instead, he dropped a few F-bombs to underscore that, hey, no, I'm only here because they asked me. That's it. He tried to make it clear instead that talking to the media really has no importance to him or the team. Could not have been more clear. You are not important to me. This is not important to me. And it's certainly his right to feel that way. But again, it's not smart. If you've been listening to me long enough, you've heard me mention the test I try to live by when it comes to social media or any other forum where I have the itch to make a public statement or let people know how I feel. I first have to ask myself three questions. Does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? And does it need to be said by me right now? And if I can't answer with a definitive yes to all three questions, then it's probably best I hold off saying it. Wait a day. Run it by someone I trust first. And for those wondering if everything I say on TV when I'm on one of FS1's studio shows has to pass that test, the answer is yes. I don't even need to go through the exercise, though, because it's my job to answer the questions posed to me or give my view on the topics being discussed. Did De'Aaron have to let everyone know in that room that they don't matter to him? What purpose did it serve? How did it serve him? Besides, and I imagine most of you already know this, the media are simply the conduit between athletes and fans. We can't put all the fans into a press room for a press conference. So, media doing their job were selected to be the representatives. Yes, athletes have their own platforms now, but they get to pick and choose what they say, what they display, what they reveal. Good reporters will ask the question, no matter how uncomfortable or sensitive, that is sitting in the heads of fans. It's really why we're there is we're supposed to take the brunt of asking those questions, getting the information you want to know without you having to go through, having to confront or suffer a reporter or, excuse me, a player or coach who doesn't like difficult questions. So when De'Aaron indicates that press conferences don't really have any value to him, he's saying that communicating what's going on with the team to its fans doesn't really matter to him, or he does not understand that that's what press conferences are for. They're not just an exercise for reporters to throw questions out there or ask difficult questions at all. It's a matter of trying to give information to fans that they couldn't otherwise get. Now, there may come a day when De'Aaron wants to get a message out there, a message after he's done playing. And the media's interest in delivering it could hang on what kind of guy he is now, when it's the media that's looking for a message from him. I tell the athletes that I work with that their popularity changes dramatically once they're no longer playing. It's stunning, the fall off, the drop off.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's why the time to forge relationships, to do somebody a favor, to be find a way to develop a relationship with, it doesn't have to be all media, but some media need to know that you're an okay guy. The time to do that, though, is when you're in the spotlight. Even if the athlete feels those relationships really can't do anything for them in the moment. Because there may come a time after their career when they need a favor, when they need access or a connection. And how they acted when they were in demand can go a long way toward determining if that favor is given. And media remains in the game. The media remains a player, an element in the league. Player retires. Argument can be made that he loses all that cachet and now has less juice than somebody in the media who's still active, still covering the league, still has all those contacts, who has a voice that still matters. All right. So the other item I wanted to get to is the collapse of the Milwaukee Bucks to the Los Angeles Lakers, who were playing without LeBron James. Every flaw that makes me doubt that the Bucks can win a championship as constituted was on display. Damian Lillard, who In case you've forgotten, he's 33 years old, played the entire fourth quarter and scored 2 points, missing 5 of his 6 shots and all 4 of his 3-point attempts. He struggled to get a clean look against Taurean Prince, who also played all 12 minutes. Chris Middleton was 1 for 7 in the final period, unable to move well enough to shake Austin Reeves and attempt anything more than contested mid-range jumpers. Giannis Antetokounmpo was a disaster at the free throw line, missing 5 of his 6 attempts and handling the ball with 7 turnovers. And for those of you at home, the free throw line issues for Giannis are going to continue as long as he shoots it with the form that he has. That straightening up and shooting it flat and hard is really hard. It's susceptible to how fatigued you are. It's not a high percentage shot inherently. The fact that he shoots it as well as he did or does is actually fairly remarkable. But outside of the free throws, much of the awful shooting I lay at the feet of Coach Doc Rivers, who allowed the pace to slow to a crawl and had his team essentially go ISO one at a time for the last 7 or 8 minutes of regulation. They drew 1 foul in the entire fourth quarter, and they did not shoot a single free throw. But that's what happens when you go ISO. You're essentially going, and you're playing slow. You're essentially going against a set defense, so you're not going to get opponents out of position or scrambling to recover or help, which is when illegal contact more often than not occurs. It was mind-blowing to watch because I feel like I saw the same thing in Philadelphia in crunch time and with the Clippers and with the Boston Celtics. And the only reason it worked in Boston, I would suggest, is that they had the toughest-minded, most resilient ISO player Doc Rivers has ever had in Paul Pierce and a lockdown defense that could basically suffocate the opposition until Pierce found a way to make a bucket or two. That's my only explanation as to why Doc continues in the same vein down the stretch with every team since. And it's why, I would venture, so many opponents have been able to come back from 3-1 series deficits against him. Because they adjust, and he does not. Once an opponent figures out one of his teams, how to stop them, that's pretty much it. He leaves it solely up to his players to get the job done down the stretch. And there's always an element at that when you get to the playoffs. But a coach can help them, can put them in position, in more favorable positions. Rick Adelman always comes to mind when I think of this. Whatever you thought about Adelman, talking to players, watching the teams that he coached, he had a knack for, we're going to you. This is where we're going to get you the ball. And some of it was, he'd find out from them. Where do you like it? How do you like it? And then would watch the results. May have to adjust that. You know what? You're not as good there as you think. Let's get it to you here. But with Doc, I just don't see that. And I see a certain figuring it out as they go, particularly with a team that's working off of 2 stars that were the main man and now trying to coalesce their abilities in Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. They need some direction and help how to make that work. It looks like Doc just leaves it up to his players rather than running sets to get them to the ball in certain places or positions or flipping strategies to get them out of a funk. And I don't know if it's age or unfamiliarity, but I've never seen Lillard stymied in crunch time, unable even to get off a shot, as much as I have this season. We've seen him get his shot blocked or have him leave his feet, realize he's going to get his shot blocked, and then attempt a desperation pass to a teammate who wasn't really open or was actually expecting Lillard to take the shot, all of which winds up being a confidence-deflating live turnover. Opposition, opponent going the other way. And I get the sense, based on what he has said and how he plays, that Giannis is looking for Damian to take the reins late in games, to lead them to wins and ultimately a championship. He's more than happy to step aside because I think this is why he wanted Damian, was willing to see Drew Holiday go. He believes in Damian as a closer in a way that he never quite did with Drew. Drew could, but has never displayed the hunger to be in that role that Damian has. Now, Lillard, though, in Milwaukee, does not look completely comfortable dominating the ball or taking the shots the way he did in Portland. It used to be if you played up on him on the perimeter, he was going by you and getting to the rim. Now, he still has the blow-bys, but I see him looking to kick out far more than he ever did before, rather than try to finish. And I thought, maybe, okay, you know, have I watched every minute of every Milwaukee game? No. But, and so maybe it was my imagination that he was not trying to finish at the rim at the same level that he has in the past. So Basketball Reference has a thing where they keep track of the percentage of shots taken in at certain distances. 0 to 3, 3 to 10. 10 to 16, maybe 16 to out to the 3-point arc and then beyond. And as well as their shooting percentages at each of those distances. And there's no question, he from 0 to 3 feet, he has taken the fewest, he has the fewest attempts of his career by a stretch. He's attempting more mid-range shots, which never has really been his thing. And his shooting percentages bear that out. The only difference in the two overtimes that it took for the Lakers to ultimately win the game is that the Bucks stopped taking contested shots for the most part. But the Lakers' defense dictated who was taking the shot, which wound up being a Malik Beasley three more often, maybe not more often than not, but more often than you'd want. And Beasley missed 4 out of 5 of them. The one make being with 2 seconds left in the second OT and the Lakers leading by 5. In other words, an inconsequential 3. The Bucks scored exactly twice in the second OT. And one was Lillard on a breakaway dunk after picking off a pass. And the other was Giannis with a finger roll off a pick and roll with Lillard where the Lakers just had a defensive breakdown. And I'm just talking about the offensive issues. There was a lot of talk about how Doc had shored up the defense when he came on for Adrian Griffin. And just watching, again, I wasn't seeing it. I knew what the numbers said, but I wasn't seeing tougher defense. Malik Beasley might be worse than Lillard when it comes to that end of the floor if you just focus on him and what he's doing defensively. On Austin Reeves' dagger three, he set a simple guard-on-guard, Reeves did, simple guard-on-guard pick for D'Angelo Russell and then flared to the left. And Lillard doesn't look as if he's guarding anyone, but it appears Reeves is his assignment because Beasley is on Russell at the start of the play and stays with him by getting over Reeves' screen. I don't know if the rule was guard-on-guard, we're switching it, but Reeves simply moved to the left. Nobody stepped out. Lillard never actually reacted to the play at all. I'm not sure what he was thinking. As for the rest of the team, Patrick Beverley is all sound and fury at this point. Chris Middleton labors to stay in front of athletic wings, and he got torched by Reeves more than once. Maybe that's he's still getting back into shape, but to me, physically, I'm not sure that he can get back to what he once was, which was, I mean, they're defense was pretty formidable when Middleton still looked like he could move and Drew Holiday was there. And of course, you had Giannis backing all of it up. Now, one of my listeners and social media followers pointed out why some media people may have been fooled into thinking that Doc had improved the defense because they simply looked at the fact they were giving up fewer points without taking notice of the fact that Doc also had them slow down their pace. Slower pace, fewer points scored overall. That does not mean the defense has improved at all, as their performance against the Lakers clearly demonstrated. All right, before I go, I want to mention my sponsor, Mizzen and Main. The weather is starting to turn nice, which means more outdoor activity, which might mean a little more golf for some of you. I wear Mizzen and Main. As you know, I wear it on TV almost exclusively for all of my shirts, jackets. But I also wear their golf gear almost exclusively, as does another lefty, Phil Mickelson. I say his name apprehensively. I don't know how you feel about Phil as a person, as a golfer. Pretty good. In any case, their joggers, their polo shirts, their three-quarter zips, their merch, and even their golf stuff is fairly reasonably priced, and it's made of great, flexible, breathable, comfortable material that looks super classy without looking too stuffy or old-fashioned. You know what I mean. You've seen it out on the golf courses. They got a fresh look, and I want you to try them out and see what I mean. So my listeners can get $35 off their purchase by using the code BUCHER35. My last name, BUCHER35. Shipping is always free. Go check out their website, mizzenandmain.com. MIZZENANDMAIN.com. All right, that does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And the thing that I really want to get into next is inspired by the NCAA tournament, both men's and women, and the behavior that we're seeing from the respective sides, and how we view how male basketball players, both at the collegiate level and pro, how we judge that and what we expect of them and the rules that we set versus what we are applauding or accepting from the women. As somebody who has a daughter who's playing collegiate basketball right now, I've watched a lot of it. I'm fascinated by it, but I'm really fascinated by the tournament and what I've seen and how dramatically different we're reacting to certain behavior. Something may come up to preclude that, but that's where I'm thinking of going in the next podcast. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.